It's Thursday, April 23rd, 2015, and you're listening to Last Time on Video Games, the show about retro video games and sometimes some other stuff. You're listening to episode 102. When are we going to get crazy Uber? Runtime for this episode is 54 minutes. Hello and welcome to Last Time on Video Games, the podcast with a Class D license. My name is Jeremy.
I have a Class S license in Burnout Paradise, but that doesn't apply to crazy taxis. I'm Tyler.
I've got a CDL. Does that count?
Is that a card delimited list?
A CDL?
Yeah.
Stands for commercial driver's license. You need it to operate big trucks.
Oh, wait, you have a commercial driver's license?
No, I don't have an actual CDL.
Then you shouldn't tell jokes about it. Bad joke.
It would have been a better joke if Tyler knew what it meant.
All right. So that's the story of our lives, right?
I have jokes that are funny, but no one else understands.
Then they're not funny.
Yeah. They're funny to me, and that's the important part.
Arguably.
Well, I am the best here, so I'm the most important one.
He has the most Zach points. I can't dispute that.
Aha!
We have to find, like, someone whose name is Zach. Or Zachary Zach.
Possibly Zachariah.
Yeah, Zachariah Zacherston. The Zacharist of all the Zachs. And then who will lead the Zachs out of Egypt.
Although he had to end up in Egypt in the first place, and I don't know how many Zachs are already there.
I'm not going.
So, Zach, what have you been playing?
I'm playing a lot of Dead or Alive 5 last round. So I've been playing a lot of that. I've been playing a lot more Civ 5 lately and a lot of League of Legends. I was actually playing a bit of the Earth mode, practice dodging some skill shots.
Yeah, it's really good practice at that since they're coming at you three times every 2 seconds.
I had one game where I was playing Nidalee and I was solo defending against three people and not getting hit by skill shots, and my 4-man remaining team got butchered by two people by getting hit by every single skill shot.
Yeah, you're dodging out of the way. They expect you to face take, and you're like, yoink, zip, zip.
I was in a different lane.
Zippity-dow.
Like, I was in an entirely different lane.
Yeah, so you're good at dodging skill shots.
So good that they wrap around to your teammates on the other side of the map.
Like, the mode isn't the best in the world, but as soon as I started playing champions that were much harder to just delete, like Nidalee.
Yeah.
Make people mad at me.
You throw spears forever?
Yeah, pretty much.
So I forgot about the whole Civ 5 thing. Zach, Cody, and I actually started playing a game. So
we didn't ask me?
You weren't on.
I have a phone and an email address.
I assumed Cody was the one who was kind of setting the whole thing up.
Well, he also wanted to do it as like a test just to see how it worked with multiplayer.
And I can't figure out how to get back in. Cody set it so that it was set on a mode called Pit Boss. So everybody can theoretically join a static server, take their turn, and go. I didn't see our server up, so I wonder if Cody accidentally killed it.
I'm almost certain he did. I didn't realize he stood it up that way.
Well, he set it up as Pit Boss, so he can do it. I wonder if he can load it as the host, and then we can rejoin the game.
I think he can.
A turn-a-day version of Civ is, like, what I want. Or a turn every 12 hours, maybe.
Well, the thing is, like, if you had somebody set up a server, because there are static servers that I saw on the site, so, like, maybe, you know, Tyler, if you wanted to, could set up a game and then let that server run like you do with your Minecraft servers and stuff, and we could all do that kind of thing. So we were playing it, and it feels a lot different because you have multiple people.
Right. That
Cody,
wasn't particularly evil.
Cody traded me a city for some resources. It was a city out in the middle of nowhere. Like, I don't know why it was there.
Cody doesn't know how to colonize.
No, he also has the most cities out of anybody. And so that created
really good, but in Civ 5,
no, yeah, because it creates
4.
Massive amounts of unrest and people
you have
get
to know
unhappy.
How to deal with.
He was Hawaii and decided, well, since I got embarkment, I might as well go colonize everywhere. So
he made that mistake.
It's very difficult to take over.
Well, the problem after that was, you know, got a lot of unhappiness. You have to deal with rebels in your city, and then you know, me and him kind of had a semi understanding of. He gave me the city for protection, but then he said another mistake he made. As I'm preparing, you know, I've got this military force. I'm looking to go get Portugal because, you know,
and then he starts
there.
Complaining.
And
about
then
his
Cody
lack
goes,
units.
I don't have any troops. Well, I have an army on your island and no one to stop me.
Evil or not, you are nothing if you're not an opportunist.
So I took his capital city away.
I was at least posturing and pretended I have troops, so.
Yeah, Cody's like, I don't have any troops.
Although I did build the terracotta army and have a militaristic nation state constantly throwing units my way. I just kept releasing all of them because I'm like, I don't have the upkeep for this.
I now have a militaristic nation state, my friend. I have a big army. I have multiple capital cities. I have more wonders built than anybody else.
But do you have works of art?
Yeah, Tyler is going to defend until his tourism board is so good.
I'm just going to take over the rest of the nations because I can kill Cody. Like, if we start this up, I can kill Cody in a few turns.
I can spread my culture to one nation. That's easy. Although I'm actually currently Buddhist, which is Zach's religion. So
I forgot. The religion mechanic seems like they'd be really fun in multiplayer. I mean, they're good anyway, but
they're way more interesting in multiplayer because you can subvert. Although the thing, like, Zach upgraded his religion before I upgraded mine, and I'm like, oh man, I want Zach's religion. It gives me all sorts of benefits. So,
well, and also because you have the fact that you have multiple human players, the way deal making works
is a lot more interesting.
And, you know, me and Cody, we all were constantly having different deals, like whales for pearls and
whales for wood. Cody had a lot of whales.
I now have all of his whales because they're all outside of Honolulu.
Aquaman, and you're like, whales to me.
No, they were all outside of Honolulu, which is the city I took over.
Ah,
that's an interesting way of how that aspect comes up.
And research agreements, I knew, were really interesting.
We didn't get to the point where we could get that.
Okay,
far.
I was researching the technology that allowed me to start doing them.
Also, by the way, I have more research done than you.
Yeah, I have more specific research done than you.
No, you don't.
How do you know?
Because I couldn't steal any of it.
Well, I had a spy defending my city.
Yes, but apparently not the right one because my spy came back and said, he's got nothing, bro.
Well, which one were you looking after? Because you have to steal from ones with high potential, otherwise there's no technology.
Your capital city.
Oh, that's not my science city. What are you doing, bro? You should have spied better.
It was the one that had the highest potential on your nation.
Oh, really?
Yep.
The capital probably gets a bonus.
I thought my West Coast one had the highest potential.
But oh, well. The spy said, he's got nothing, bro.
Oh, well, fine then. Jeez.
That's why he came back as a... I think he came back into your nation as a diplomat.
What Zach is telling you is he has lasers and he's about to erase you from the map.
He had almost double my score at some point. I started catching up again, but I don't think I can catch him at this point. I think we should restart that game and seed to Zach.
And invite me.
Well, because Cody was playing Polynesia,
yeah,
which is Hawaii, as Tyler said. Tyler was playing Portugal? No, Poland.
Poland, which is apparently militaristic, and I'm not a militaristic Civ player. I went with random, though, so.
And I was playing Japan.
Oh, Japan is super mega OP.
I'm looking to kill someone.
That's the thing. Japan and Egypt are pretty OP, and there are probably a few others.
I like Caesar.
He's pretty good.
It would have been more of a, you can be OP in this, with this, other than the fact that I didn't ever have to fight
anyone. None of the computers really cared.
Well, the computers were set at level 3, because I'm bad at that game. And Cody was at all three of us were set at Warlord, you know, level 3. Also, it was large islands.
They were not large.
They
at
were
all.
Not large for one thing. So 90% of the map is water.
Ah, sweet. You get privateers, except not in that game.
So it made it much more difficult. Cody had the advantage in that case because he could embark and move around much easier than we could because we couldn't travel through deep water.
But he overextended and couldn't keep his people happy with his whales.
Yeah, so he couldn't
find
his
pearls.
No, I had pearls.
I had silver out my ass. I was building cities made out of silver.
And Cody was like, whales for silver.
Sheep for rocks.
I think I went with, what did I trade you? Horses for iron?
Yeah, I also made that trade with Cody a couple times, but...
Also, Cody doesn't really understand one little thing. Yeah, it's only one gold per turn, but that's one gold per turn that's going to come up big later.
For 30 turns? That's 30 gold. That's actually not that much.
Well, in Civ, 30 gold is actually pretty
it's
big.
It's decent
especially
early.
That's like a quarter of a monument.
Well, he was like, I'm going to give you whales, and I said, for pearls, and I said, I will give you pearls for whales and a gold per turn.
Yeah, that's a pretty good deal for Zach.
Although I was outproducing Zach in terms of gold, so
I started really building up my military, like that was why I had my entire nation was road networked.
He had to pay his military,
and I was paying a military that was sufficient enough that if I wanted to go all the way across the map where you were, remember I knew where you were, you didn't know where I was.
Yeah, I did.
Oh, did you finally find me?
You shared an embassy with me.
Oh,
I knew
so that
where you were.
Okay, so that does show up.
Just your capital.
So you finally knew where I was. Me and Tyler were on far ends of the map. Cody made the mistake of spawning right next to me.
Deadly chance.
I probably could have mounted a feasible defense force, but...
Purely because of the distance between the two of us. Reinforcements would have been... Getting reinforcements there would have been a pain in the ass until I took this.
Although
city,
I may not have known you were coming until you were there.
No, so. I'm pretty obvious. Like, I build up nation, I build up armies on the banks of my opponents, and they go, you have an army there. I'd better not build up troops.
That might anger you, and you might swing your swords at me.
Yeah, but it's an interesting thing. I think it's a game mode, because of how the game functions, I think Civ 5 works better as a comp stomp thing, where the human players all gang up on the computers, simply because that game can go on for a long time, and think of what happened with Cody. Losing your capital that early, and having an enemy army that fast in a game that's, generally speaking, going to last a while, I have enough guys on his thing, or on his island, that I will wipe him out.
Yeah, you could have kicked him out of the game about a third of the way through it, so...
I mean, I think you just do that as much as it sucks, and he gets in on the next game. And so I think you have to do that.
Yeah.
And it sucks, but you get to hear the story about how Zacharia was overthrown when the Tylerians teamed up with the Romans and mounted an insurmountable defense.
I mean, otherwise you play on teams, so...
I would turn around and take out Portugal.
Yeah, 2v2 and two computers.
I'd go after Portugal next anyway, so you'd probably be safe, but I'd be sitting on like half the world. Like,
I've got culture, I've got half the world. Guess which one of us is going to win?
My blue jeans.
Tyler's blue jeans are about to win. That's true. Something is darkening the waters. Oh god, the flags of Japan. It's the rising sun. We're all doomed.
But at least they're humming the Beatles as they're coming for us.
With their divine wind, which is no longer suicide, it's bombing you.
They're blaring our music. Awesome! I've tried to win through culture in that game, but for whatever reason, I just can't do it.
I've done it a few times.
Well, I actually get kind of tired of it and then just build up an army and go roll somebody.
My problem is I feel like I have to have everything built in every city, and I think that's not the way to play that game.
Not competitively. I prefer to play win by paying all of my nation states to vote for me.
Oh, that's also a good way to go. So
no one actually could build that yet because no one had the printing press and knew what everybody was. Did any of us ever meet that last computer?
Yeah, Cody had met everyone.
Oh yeah, he did. I think I ended up meeting them eventually.
I hadn't.
So he could spread news of your war crimes.
No, that's true. I guess you can actually publicly denounce.
Cody technically went to war before I did. He took a city away from Portugal.
Also, you guys went to war really early on, and then...
He had a scout invade my territory. He must die. And so I chased him off with a warrior.
Anything else, Zach, besides the rise and fall of
Zacharia.
Nations?
That's pretty much it. I really like Civ 5.
It's a fun game.
Like I said, League of Legends, a lot of League of Legends in Civ 5.
Civ's one of those games where you just go one more turn until 3 in the morning.
Yeah, I've done that. Okay, one more turn. I'll get to bed after I get
the sun.
I have to be to work in an
hour. The sun is rising.
All right. What have you been playing, Tyler?
All sorts of stuff. I've been playing more Smash, so that's cool.
Are you above rank 700?
I am, actually. I think if you go to the site right now, I'm at like 650 or something to that effect.
It's like 50 people.
I find it would have been funny. Are you finally above 700? Yep, I'm at 699.
Yeah. Now, I'm actually rising pretty fast. There are definitely some good people, but I haven't encountered, like, the top of the list guys. Although, I have been mostly picking people roughly around my ranking, just because I'm like, well, they're about that level, so I should not get my face stomped.
Well, in theory, that's where you should be playing and rising by beating the people around you.
Yeah. I could challenge the top of the ladder. It would just end poorly for me, I feel. So, what with his 150 win streak?
Meteor smash you back down to 900.
I don't think that's how that works.
Some guys on Reddit were talking about that side, and they're like, oh yeah, these guys are so nice. They'll, like, talk about how fun a game it was after they beat you with 3 stock before even choosing the stage. So, Smash, yay. I got a couple games on Steam recently because I'm like, ooh, $2, that's a good price for a game. One of them is Reassembly, which is, like, a Lego building game. You build Lego ships and then go fly through unexplored sectors and fight other factions of Lego ships. And if you defeat a large enough Lego ship, you unlock that faction. And they're all slightly different. They mostly get access to different blocks. Like, the default one gets really good firepower, mostly in missiles. You can have all the missiles. The faction I'm currently playing starts with shield projectors, which is normally a late game tech. You start with smaller ships and you go and destroy other ships and collect resources. Eventually, you can build a really big ship that can spawn other ships. And then the ships that you spawn can actually spawn more ships if you want. So you can actually build up an armada eventually. I actually have more fun playing the like small dogfighter class guys. Problem is, if you actually need one faction in particular is like plant things that grow on asteroids, they all shoot at you, and none of them do particularly large amounts of damage. But because you have 5,000 plants on asteroids shooting at you, you die fairly quickly.
It's death by a thousand cuts at that
exactly.
point.
So you kind of have to take them out from a range, and I have yet to find a great strategy to deal with them. I really want, like, a single-use nuke just so I can take them out. But currently, the ship I'm flying has, like, 9 shield projectors and has, like, all the thruster. It has all the forward momentum, can kind of turn, and cannot stop. So...
The Lappy 9000 can kind of turn,
but it actually
cannot stop or be stopped.
The way this faction's weapons work is they only have one laser weapon that has a base unit, and then you can attach modifiers to it. So, like, it has a
fire laser,
yeah,
ice laser,
no
fire ice laser.
It's like a range damage, velocity, and fire rate. And you
a laser can get velocity.
Yeah, I mean the projectile has to travel across the screen.
It's more a beam than a laser.
I mean,
or are you fighting in light years distance?
Yes. No, they're like little light projectiles.
Are they like Gundam beams?
They're like Star Wars lasers.
Yes. At one point, I actually had this ship. I had to attach more thrusters to it so I could deal with the recoil. But I had this thing firing so quickly and such powerful shots out of 6 cannons that it was actually I was able to go faster backwards by firing my gun than I could go forwards.
That's fantastic.
It's really fun.
So your brakes are you fire all of your guns simultaneously and that stops you?
That's actually how I stopped my ship. So
you have made an A-10. Congratulations.
So it's a lot of fun. I kind of burnt out on it and then started playing Chrono Trigger, so I haven't really picked it back up yet.
That actually reminds me, I wanted to mention this game on Steam Greenlight that actually is greenlit, that you would probably like, Good Robot. It's by Seamus Young, who did DM of the Rings.
So I like Seamus Young.
It's a shoot 'em up where you play a robot in like a post-apocalyptic future and all the other robots are evil.
Which is why you're the good robot?
Yeah. He's changed the gameplay a lot, so I don't actually know what it's going to look like. He had a bunch of different upgrade systems he was trying. He was trying to strike a balance between Gradius and like an RPG where you're continually getting stat ups. And I don't know what he landed on. But it's already greenlit, so we don't need to.
Like, go greenlight it for him? That's pretty cool. That sounds like a game I'd be interested in.
Yeah. All the development blogs you did for it really sounded like you would like it. And me too, but...
The second game I picked up is called Into the Gloom, which
is... very gray.
It is very gray.
Is it gloomy, would you say?
I'm also not entirely certain what you were doing.
It's like... It's a point-and-click adventure, except you actually move around in 3D space and go and find the things. There's not really a whole lot of moon logic to it. It's all pretty straightforward. You can figure it out pretty easily. But it's also like a horror survival game, kind of like Silent Hill, almost. There's a point-and-click game from the 90s. Sorry. There's a point-and-click game from the 90s called Dare to Dream, and this game reminds me a huge amount of it. It's really surreal. You're playing a character or a kid who had a brain tumor removed and, like, died during the operation, but his soul got detached from his body on the way down, so his body's still alive, but his soul's, like, in netherworld limbo. It's called the Gloom. But, like, the way the lighting works, like, everything's all hazy until you get close enough to it. It's really dark the entire time. There are these things that just pop out of nowhere. They don't actually do anything, but they still scare the out of me every time I see them, even though I know they're harmless.
So they jump scare at you.
Yeah, they jump scare
other
at
than
me.
The one thing that game overed you that I remember seeing.
He's something else. He's called the Shadow, and he's one of those that has been there for so long that all he thinks about now is torturing people.
I've obviously been saying that I've watched him, but I was using the Steam view thing, and I was watching Tyler play this game for a little while.
I mean, it's mostly
just to explain that a little bit.
It's a horror puzzle game made by one guy using entirely Creative Commons art assets, which is really cool. I enjoyed the game. The one downside is it's kind of short. It has multiple endings depending on how you either die or manage to beat it. My favorite ending, by far, you have to have beaten the game once in order to find all the information you need to do it. But you can get like a reincarnation device and it will transport you to the nearest living object in the physical plane. But the soul you're projecting onto has to be less strong than yours.
Huh.
And the place where your character decides to use it is in front of his pet iguana's tank. And so he reincarnates himself as his iguana. And the ending is just like his mom is like no longer struggling under debt because he's dead. His physical body's dead. So she's no longer paying for life support. And then it like zooms in on the iguana in the cage. And there's just like, it superimposes with an image of your character's face. And he just screams at the existential horror being trapped in an iguana.
So this is a game where there's basically no good ending.
There are like two bad endings, two good endings, and like kind of an okay-ish one. One of them is you get trapped by that guy and he sends you in his torture chamber forever and you get
those
tortured
are the ones
for the
I saw.
Eternity. One of them are like these ghost things later in the game that kind of take up that guy's spot after he's no longer a threat. Actually, like multi-possess you, so you get possessed by Legion essentially, and they take over your body and you're stuck in limbo, and then they walk around with your body and like have no real, like they just randomly take and choose who's in charge. So your mom will ask you a question and like five different people will respond. So that's
so
actually
like everyone
a
is
one.
John. Huh? Everyone is John is a tabletop RPG where the GM plays John and everyone else, and all of the players play the voices in John's head, one of which always has control.
That sounds like fun.
That sounds weird.
It's good for a pickup game. It is usually pretty humorous.
One of the endings is you have to kill yourself in the gloom to get out. Did you see that guy in the cage where you're like, it looks like your buddy's in the prison cell there? He's actually a different guy who looks very similar.
To the shadow dude?
Yeah, he's actually like a planeswalker, basically, who astral projected out of his physical body, and then someone hacked up his physical body for science, thinking he was dead, so he got trapped in the gloom plane.
Does he tell you that or something?
It's revealed through notes you can pick up. So he's actually like several millennia old because he's been hopping back and forth between bodies in this place forever. So there's a point in the game where you can choose to let him out of prison or not. So like after you let him out of that cell, there's another place you can choose to open a door for him. If you open the door for him, he actually takes your body and runs off with it.
So that's not good.
And so you have to go find a different way to get out. And it turns out that you find some like ancient shaman huckster who's also like a PhD physicist or something who's like, oh yeah, I can totally project you into a body. And he projects you into a hobo. And you have to go and try to reclaim your life as a 30-year-old hobo after being a 14-year-old boy. So that's fun. One of the other ones is if you didn't release the guy, you can hang yourself and that shoves you back into your body. So
good ending.
Yeah, that's the, although you have amnesia and don't remember anything about your former life. So, you know, questionable
ending.
Gush ending. I feel like the hobo ending is better because you at least retain all your memories.
So, basically, no, there are no good endings to this game.
I mean, there are better endings. There are endings that are less
Are there any
tragic.
Good endings to life, Zach? It's just what's written on your gravestone. And really, everyone wants, that is not dead, which eternal lie. That's how you win life, is getting that on your gravestone.
Africa will not let you die?
Yes.
I'm just not going to. We've been over that.
But, like, if you have a fear of wandering around an abandoned city or subway station at night,
don't play this game?
No, definitely play this game and then die of a heart attack.
Okay.
I don't know, that guy that kept showing up, maybe it was because
really
I
annoying.
Wasn't actually playing it, but the couple times he jumped you, it didn't startle me at all.
The first time was bad, after that it just kind of, but the first time it scared me fairly well, after that it just kind of got annoying. Because I didn't realize how to avoid him.
Well, the first time he showed up, like I said, it was, you know, loud. Okay. I think it was because I wasn't playing. Like, I wasn't really, it was that disassociation. I was also watching something, so I wasn't paying that close of attention to what you were doing.
It's a matter of agency. Like, if you can run away from it, it feels more intense. The biggest thing, though, is when you're running away from that guy, because there are several times where you had to run from him, and one of, like, the little shadow guys just pops up, and they're completely harmless, but I'll, like, be running away, I'm like, okay, gotta make this turn, if I get caught on this corner, he's gonna catch me, and that'd be bad, because I had to do it again. And one of the shadow guys pops up, I'm like, ah! God damn it, shadow guy!
He did a good job with the sound, because I remember when you actually got away from him, the sound going through it was pretty well done.
The sound in the entire game is excellent, and it's all just, like, kind of ambient. There's not really music, it's, like, ambient sound, but it's all Creative Commons. He just pulled it off of, like, open source stuff and just threw it together and gave credits at the end.
Well, when you're running away from him, it got a lot more intense than when you were just kind of wandering around. So.
Yeah, and they play, like, this little sting when the shadow guys show up, and each of the different, like, main villains has their own music. Nope. music
theme.
It's a pretty good game. Also, it's $2 on Steam right now. So,
well, be when this episode is released.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
No, that's its price on Steam.
Well, that's a pretty good price.
Didn't look like my thing, but it didn't look bad. It's just not my kind of game.
I got probably 6 to 8 hours out of it or something, which for $2, I mean, that's not bad.
That's really good money for hours. Anything else, Tyler?
Nothing I can think of. Alex started playing Animal Crossing again, which is like me playing a game, but not. So.
Yeah, I can see that. All right. I continue to play Xenoverse and be vaguely depressed by it and be like, why
are you still playing that game?
When I unlock Beerus and Super Saiyan God Goku, one day it'll happen, and then my life will be complete.
How far have you gone?
Not any further than last time. I'm doing, like, training missions.
Awesome.
So one day I can go fight Ginyu.
Oh, man. You're not even that far. Okay.
Yeah.
Man, that
granted, I don't think I'd be able to get the motivation to play as long as he has with that game.
I play it for like 20 minutes at a time, and that's not bad. It's a good for listening, especially the training missions are good for listening to podcasts and stuff, but they do get repetitive faster than I'd like.
Like, if that was a more solid fighting game,
yeah.
I feel like it would be a lot more fun.
I do that anyway.
Plus.
Like, I don't need a game to do that. I'll do that with Civ. I'll do that with League of Legends.
Civ is a really good game for that. I focus too much on League of Legends. I've been playing a little more League of Legends, not a lot, mostly just bot games. Been watching a lot of League of Legends, even though this week was terrible for
it. Poor CLG. They choked
CLG.
Again. CLG Bronze Age.
Worse than everyone else, just like always.
But Unicorns of Love, they might have a chance in... They might have a snowball's chance in hell against SK this week.
Nah, they're canned unicorn meat.
Even you know that against SK.
There's this great interview with Forgiven where the guy was like, yeah, well, you know, in Europe, you're all used to playing Unicorns of Love and Giants. But at IEM, you had to fight the freaking GE Tigers and the Yoi Flash Wolves. These are real animals. They're going to tear you apart. You can't just slay them with your sword.
Speaking of which, did you know that Scotland's national animal is the unicorn?
No, but that's pretty cool.
Are they of love, though?
No, the unicorns of hate. It's Scotland.
Are there any professional Scottish League of Legends players?
Snoopy.
Snoopy's Scottish?
Yeah.
But he's not a pro anymore.
He's the only one I can think of.
I kind of want Elements to change their name back to Evil Geniuses.
Not going to happen.
But not going to happen.
For legal reasons.
Yep.
Bravely Default, I continue to play. It continues to be pretty good as I slowly progress through more of the story.
They're making a second one, aren't they?
Yeah, I think it's out in Japan.
I forget what it's called, like, Bravely Second.
And that's got a subtitle.
I really hope seconding is a mechanic, because braving and defaulting is a mechanic.
I believe seconding is already a mechanic. It is, actually. It's their sort of pay-to-win mechanic.
Huh?
It's a mechanic. You have second points, which you can use at any time. You stop time and get an immediate turn for everyone.
Oh, that's cool.
You get one every 8 hours. It's in sleep mode, up to a max of 3. Or you can pay, I think, 50 cents for one.
You.
Yeah, I think... I never use them.
Yeah, well, the fact that even exists.
I think it's they're experimenting with it. It's not that bad to me, because you don't need it to play the game. It just makes the game a little bit easier.
That is
it
true.
It was in no way balanced around that mechanic.
So, I've been considering picking it up for a while. Would you recommend Bravely Default?
It is one of my favorite JRPGs. Oh. That said, I'm almost done with it, and if you wanted to borrow it from me,
fair
I own
enough.
It on a real cart.
We played Chrono Trigger last week.
Yeah, that's why I would probably be done with it if I hadn't taken a break to play through Chrono Trigger.
How does it stack up?
I think it's better than Chrono Trigger. I like the combat system in it a lot.
That helps.
And the story is pretty good. It's a lot more character focused. There are two couples that are really cute. One's all tsundere, yay. And one's all sweet and shy and kiss already, you idiots.
I watched an extra credits episode recently where they're talking about how hard it is to write something or write about a stage romance that isn't the getting together stage.
Yeah, because like, what is a romance when you've been together for 20 years? It can be done, but
yeah,
that's not that different from a friendship that's really intimate.
Yeah, I mean, that like, how do you even write about that?
You can
that?
Write the about to get married one, but that usually ends with them leaving, deciding not to get married for some reason.
Or, like, I feel like breakups are a stage that can be written about better,
yeah.
But
that's not really about love, usually. That's about internal
anti-love.
Conflict and, like, wondering why no one can love you and depression.
And hating this one particular person.
Not my experience with breakups. But
speaking
as
only... It would take a lot for me to hate someone, especially if I chose to live with them for, like, a couple months. Like, I don't know that I could ever hate them, just actively dislike living with them.
I think the closest I've come is deciding that's not a person I want in my life after all. Which is not hatred.
Speak from the external viewing of relationships, having not actually
bothered with them myself. Well, just go kidnap someone and then force them to...
Just bump into someone at the fair, drop your pendant, and make them...
Make sure you're carrying a katana on you, though. You never know when you might need it.
You're now my girlfriend because I said so, and no, you're not allowed to talk.
Now let's go save them. You're the silent protagonist. I'm your sidekick.
Now let's go save the world.
Okay, the drawback is you can't talk. The flip side is I have to follow you everywhere. You decide where we go. And also what I'm wearing.
That's even better now that I think about it.
Let's not do that.
So playing that and Fallen London still.
Oh yeah, I forgot I'd been playing that.
I'm almost done with the Shuttered Palace storyline. I just have to make one more opera.
I'm trying very slowly to build up my dangerous to progress the person of some importance line.
Yeah, I'm going to get around to that, but I figure it's easier with my dangerous and shadowy just to let them get up to 70 through the profession that slowly
Have you done the
them.
Affair of the Box yet?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Wait, never mind. You have to have been exiled from the Shuttered Palace first. Never mind.
I definitely was courting this woman at the Shuttered Palace, and a surgeon was like, oh man, you're wanting the right to vote. That can be surgically removed. So I defenestrated him. And so I was immediately sent to the tomb colonies. But hashtag worth. Because I got to defenestrate a misogynistic asshole.
That
and
is
then
pretty
use
awesome.
The word defenestrate on a podcast.
That's actually a word I don't know. That's a new one.
To it throw means, out a window.
Yeah, it means specifically to throw really? Someone out a window. Is it Prague? The defenestration of Prague? Is that the famous one?
I think so.
It happened twice over, I think, 20 years. A bunch of lawmakers got defenestrated from, like, a five-story building for being asshats.
I didn't even know that was a word.
I learned it from Dr. McNinja.
And then Briggs Marlowe, which is like this... It's a video game that's trying to be like a B-action movie. And it's actually got a lot of interesting stuff. It's like a God of War clone, but it's always throwing stuff at you and the levels get more and more ridiculous. The bad guy is like trying to mine in South America. and he's basically got a world devastator from Star Wars strip mining. That's the USS Indefenestrable. You have to board and go through. And it's just got like mining cranes and lava for no reason and helicopters inside it coming after you. And you're an
USS asset. Indefenestrable.
Yes.
So you cannot throw it out a window.
Yes. It's far too big. And also Stephen Blum plays your Aztec god sidekick who's explaining your powers to you. So
that
it's pretty
sounds
great.
Pretty good.
I've seen Let's Plays of it. I've been told that it doesn't quite have enough gameplay to get to the end, but it's always throwing new minigames at you and really trying to do the action movie thing of just throwing new stuff at you so you don't get bored. And it was pretty fun to watch someone play through it. So anyway, I think that's all I've been playing, other than the assignment, which is The Simpsons hit, Crazy Taxi.
I never played, is it Hit and Run?
Yeah, I can't remember if Hit and Run or the other one is the Crazy Taxi clone. One's a Crazy Taxi clone and one's a GTA clone.
Oh man, what to say about Crazy Taxi?
It's... Okay, so first, you choose your driver. They're completely the same.
Of four. There's white guy with green hair, black guy,
Axel,
girl guy,
BD.
And
sort of Middle Eastern
and
guy.
Older guy.
Gus.
Balding guy.
Yeah, who has like a pot belly and is like wearing an open Hawaiian shirt and flip flops.
They all have convertibles. And they're all slightly different taxis. They all look slightly different, but they all handle the exact same.
So you have to drive up to people. For some reason, there's not a forward and a reverse. There's a button to shift gear into forward and reverse, which I always hate because I always hit the wrong one. I would often accidentally tap the A button and suddenly be in reverse and be like, why are we going back?
No, I never had that problem.
It's not just one button that toggles.
Yeah, that's what I want. It's two different buttons, one for forward and reverse. You know how in a car you have a button for forward and a button for reverse.
To be fair, in an actual car, you do have gears to go.
I have
forward and reverse. But I have five gears in reverse because I have an H pattern.
Racing game mechanic is if you hold brake after you've come to a stop, you start going backwards.
Yes, but I think this game was made before that kind of became a thing.
No,
Cruisin' USA had that.
Oh, did it really?
Yep.
Also, I think this was more on the side of they kind of designed this game around the idea of you would have the forward and reverse lever.
I think so.
In an arcade
cabinet. I think
cabinet.
It was easier but to
again,
board it that way.
Put it on one button to toggle it.
I think you're right. I'm not trying to defend the forward and reverse mechanics. I think they're dumb too.
So anyway, you have to go to people with dollar signs over their head and stop at them.
Is there any difference in which one you choose?
My understanding is the
green is supposed to be easy.
Yeah. I understand you have more time to get to the destination, the greener the dollar sign is. They're like, hey, I need to go here by this time, and then you just drive them there. There are two different maps, arcade and original. The arcade isn't the original game. The original is an original one for the console release.
Oh, is that the difference?
Yeah, there are two different maps.
I only played the arcade one because I'm like, why would I want to play the original one if I could play the arcade one?
I don't remember which one I played. It had a closed store.
But I think they both do. But
so you just have to memorize the map to know where you're going. You have an arrow that points there, but it points the direct route.
So you try to run through guardrails and...
Yeah, you can do that.
You get paid if you make it in time. You also get money for doing cool tricks, mostly just driving really close to other cars.
Or jumping off...
Or doing weirdly cool placed slides ramped. With your brake.
Oh, you can drift in this?
Yeah. It's hard, but I did get a cool drift a couple of times. Usually when I was barreling down a hill and had to go into a harsh turn.
I was going to say, there are a lot of turns I would have really liked to drift around, and I didn't realize it was a mechanic.
There's no handbrake button. There's just straight brakes, which is harder to drift with in this game because their physics engine is not really
so
that
we were
good.
Talking last episode when we were trying to rank Cruisin' USA, how like bouncy the controls were. This game isn't quite as bad, but the steering felt
really,
really twitchy to me.
Inconsistent to me. Like, sometimes I'm like, I'm driving. Why am I four lanes over in a car?
I think it's fine because it does... The steering is much more responsive than Cruisin' USA's was.
Yeah, it feels
better. My problem with it is you can make the 90-degree turn perfectly fine without having to worry about it too much, whereas... That's not really how that works.
Well, I don't have a problem with that. I have a problem with I'm trying to inch right alongside a car, and I go four lanes over. And the last three times I tried that, I was fine. But this time I've apparently put too much stick on, and
okay,
I am in New Jersey.
Well, even in most racing games, I tend to choose the car with lower handling because I prefer to just be able to drift around corners. And having something this responsive is like, it feels weird.
The realer you get... In racing games, it's harder to drift and not lose it.
So it has two modes, basically, arcade and time. Time you play for 2, 5, or 10 minutes and try to get the highest score. Arcade, every time you complete a fair, you get more time, and you keep trying to extend your time. And that actually got pretty fun, which I started to get okay at the game.
That was definitely my preferred method.
Yeah, I like the mechanic of extending as you play. It does, you know, suck when you finally lose because you lose a bunch of progress in air quotes, but...
And you're going to. There's no way to just continue playing indefinitely. You're on a timer no matter what you're doing.
This game would get super boring, I think, if you played it indefinitely.
Like, I kind of really agree quickly. With you.
Like, it got pretty boring to me even playing it this way. But at least, like, one cool thing about arcade games, really well-designed ones, the more you pay for them, or the more times, rather, the more your quarter gets you. And so that way, it becomes almost like gambling in a way in that you're getting more skilled. Pinball is like that, whereas a pinball wizard can get 2 hours of pinball on a quarter, and Johnny can get 10 seconds.
There's a machine at a Gunther Tooties I played once, where I just put in the 50 cents to play it, and I ended up just having to, I put the ball in a spot where some other person could leave it, taped down the button, and just left the game running for someone else.
So I think that's good design from that perspective, but like it isn't super fun. It's really repetitive, especially once you learn where the places are. And especially once you learn which customers want to go where.
I thought they all wanted to go to the same place in order. Like,
No, each like pedestrian has a place he wants to go, and they always spawn in the same spot on the map.
Okay, I thought it was just like clusters around a destination all wanted to go to the same spot, but I may have just picked up the same person every time without realizing
it. You probably just
picked
up the same person every time. That's what I usually end up doing.
So you can, like, if you learn where all the people want to go, you can start to strategize. But
maximize your route.
I don't think the game is interesting enough for that.
Somebody clearly did since they re-released it on the
Yeah, a lot of people really like this game. I just think it's kind of meh.
I really like it for what it is, but it is not fantastic. I mean, it's good for a 5-10 minute time killer, but it's not something you're probably going to spend a lot of time with.
I like it for the same reason I like games like Gradius and Star Fox, but I don't like it nearly as much. It's not as deep. All right, any other thoughts on Crazy Taxi? It's okay. I think it was $7 on Steam. That seems way steep.
I think when I got it, it was on sale for like $3.
I mean, yeah, if you get it on a Steam sale for 50 cents, that's a steal.
And it's part of the Sega Collection, and, like, all the games in the Sega Collection are $8, and I think that's way more than you should really be paying for a lot of them.
I think five is probably a maximum I personally think you should spend on this.
Like, Nights into Dreams was $8.
I feel less bitter about that purchase. Not that I feel bitter about this purchase, but...
You feel less ripped off?
Yeah, like, if it wasn't for this podcast, I would be pretty upset about it. With Nights, like... The experience of getting to play that game was worth $8 to me, even though I don't think it was great.
I feel the reverse. I mean, I was playing this game when I first bought it, like, last year, because I, like I said, I enjoy it.
It's something I didn't enjoy Nights into Dreams. Playing for, like, 10 or 15 minutes at a time occasionally.
Yeah, like, I'm
probably not going to, but I could. I play Payday instead.
All right, so do we want to add some games to our list?
Yeah, sure.
Let's go for it. What do we got next?
Well, first, at the top of the list, we got Super Metroid. In the middle of the list, we have Punch-Out. At the bottom of the list, we have Space Harrier. If you want to see our list, it's on our website, www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. So first up, we have another racing game, one Zach really liked. I thought was pretty mad. I don't remember what Tyler thought. Hydro Thunder.
I thought it was kind of meh.
A game that's really cool when you have the cool throttle thing in the arcade and eight other people next to you. But that was just an okay racing game in my mind. It's cool because it has boats. I like boats.
I really like it. Like, I had a lot of fun with it.
I think it might be the best racing game we had played for the podcast thus far.
It might be. So let's...
It also benefits from the fact that this was a remake.
Yeah, that's true.
Details.
Let's start at F-Zero. It's not our highest rating racing game, but it's also our highest rating racing game. They're pretty similar to me in feel, honestly. Hydro Thunder has cool shortcuts on the course, and the boost is pretty cool, but F-Zero has a similar mechanic.
I don't know. I feel like it has a bit more variety because you have to like pick up the boost. I guess that's not really different than driving over a boost pad.
Well, you have to worry about picking up the boost in Hydro Thunder. You actually have to worry about controls a lot more because not only are you trying to keep up with everybody else, you're worrying about hitting the wrong wave.
Like, I like F-Zero's damage mechanic, but it never really came into play. Like, you kind of have to suck at F-Zero for it to matter.
Oh. I never had a problem with that either.
It's much bigger in F-Zero X when there are alternate game modes about killing the enemy racers, but... F-Zero is not F-Zero X.
Blood Falcon.
F-Zero X is a much better game. Okay, so above F-Zero, let's jump up to Excite Bike. That's kind of a racing game.
Kind of.
I preferred Hydro Thunder. I like the aesthetic in it a lot more. Excite Bike is very middle of the road. I mean, as we've kind of established, there's some going on. But it is a lot slower paced. And I like sprints.
I think Hydro Thunder does have a little more going on than Excite Bike. I don't like it a lot more, but...
I like Course Mastery, and Excitebike kind of doesn't, like, it has that, but it's so simple.
Yeah.
It's hard for Excitebike, like, I would like to see a modern take on that.
I think Flappy Bird, honestly.
I remember a game.
Really? Yeah.
I remember a motocross game, I can't think of what exactly it was called, that was on the N64 that you could actually make your own courses in.
That'd be kind of cool.
So jumping up a few, there are no more racing games. I think the next one that jumps out to compare it to is Life Force.
Huh.
Maybe that's just me. They're both games in which you're going at speeds.
No, I mean, you can definitely compare them at least qualitatively. I'm just not... I said huh because I'm not really sure which one I honestly prefer.
I prefer Hydro Thunder, big surprise, to Life Force. The gameplay, to me, in Hydro Thunder is more compelling. The modes are more varied, because you have... There are a few courses that are sprints, one point A to point B, and that's the course. Others that are circuits, which is start and finish are on the same place. You have to worry about picking up all the boosts and stuff. You're not worrying so much about somebody, you know, coming out and killing you like you are in Life Force. But I feel like there's more going on.
I'm gonna
second
give it to
place
Zach
is death.
Because I found another game I want to compare it to. It's a weird one, but I think it's a good spot for comparison. Pokemon Snap.
Huh.
I like Pokemon Snap a lot more. I feel like there's a slightly higher mastery element. I mean... Not exactly, because I think you could get better at Hydro Thunder than you could at Pokemon Snap. There's the competitive element, but...
Based on flavor alone, I think I prefer Pokemon Snap.
Yeah, it's got more color. Again, Hydro Thunder is really dreary and dark.
Is it?
I don't think so.
I feel like the water's all dirty. Like, there are a few courses that are out in the sun, but I feel like most of them are, like...
How many courses did you go through?
I want to say 8.
That's most of them, but most of the courses, the water is clear. Like, yeah. It looks like...
I feel like most of them are Viking storms.
That's only one of them.
I played through two or three of them, and all my memories of that game are fairly bright. So huh.
There's okay. two courses that I can think of off the top of my head that are dark. One is at night in a city, and the other one is Vikingville.
Vikingville.
I feel like there's one through an industrial complex full of, like, mines that's pretty dark.
Even though I'm not a huge fan of rail shooters, I like the idea behind Pokemon Snap more. It's more about timing, but...
I prefer Hydro Thunder because I'm more... I like the competitive aspect of winning a race versus taking a picture.
That does do a lot for a game, and I do like competition.
But I would actually like competing in Pokemon Snap, even though the rules are...
Oh, what
a
if you could,
weird?
Like,
they
throw
are...
poison apples at your opponent's cart as you're going down the same track?
I wasn't thinking of that, although it would be kind of fun if there was, like, an interactive element where you were both trying to get this high score, but you could put, like, mines on the course or something. But we're inventing a new game. That's not
or
what
like
Pokemon Snap is.
Splattering your opponent's camera so
or
to
like,
ruin their shot.
Or, like, a, like, Arceus cry that scared Pokemon away that you could play at some point.
That'd be kind of nice. Anyway, games that don't exist.
Yeah. So we're putting it below Pokemon Snap. Right below Pokemon Snap is Castlevania 3.
Huh.
Don't know how I feel between them. I think I prefer Castlevania 3, but it's almost entirely a genre preference thing. I prefer platformers to racers, but even then it's not like a strong
I prefer
preference.
Racers to platformers, so that doesn't really help. I just think Hydro Thunder was better put together. The additional modes on top of it, you know, I mean, yeah, they're all takes on get to the end as fast as possible.
I am really ambivalent on the matter, and Zach feels more strongly about it, so I vote in favor of Hydro Thunder.
Okay, so Hydro Thunder goes below Pokemon Snap, above Castlevania 3. Okay, next a game that Zach thought was pretty meh, Tyler and I thought was pretty spiffy.
Okay, that answers a Smash? That's a lot of games.
This is, I think, contender for top of the list. I don't know if it belongs there. It's a game that I had tried to play in the past, never gotten through, but got to when we played it. The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past.
Oh.
Oh, okay. I like this game. I think I like Super Metroid more.
I was going to say, let's start
I
at
don't.
Super Metroid.
Actually, I probably like Super Metroid more if I'd actually played it all the way through.
I think I agree with that. I think you would like the aesthetics of Super Metroid more, and there's a little more choice, and the combat I think you would like more. Combat in Super Metroid actually is a little better. You have different weapons, and I mean, that's basically it.
Combat is meant to slow you down, and I feel like it serves basically the same purpose in this Legend of Zelda.
Except the boss battles, but I think you could say that same about
yeah.
Super
oh,
Metroid.
Oh yeah, definitely. The boss battles are set pieces in both games. I actually didn't realize how much they had in common in terms of how they block your progress.
Link
They're
to the Past.
Quite similar.
This game is just boring.
I really don't find it boring.
Yeah, I don't either. I think it's incredibly fun to go on a cool adventure with my sword. I get cool things like boots that let me run and charge at things. I feel like I'm not on horseback, only I'm on boots.
I'm on bootback.
I think the build-up to the Master Sword is pretty cool. It makes it a cool set piece and a thing that's...
Oh, this is the one where I couldn't find the way into the damn castle because it hid it under a freaking bush.
Clearly. Don't you know anything about bush science?
I think there is even a sign or your uncle tells you or something to go over there. It is a game about exploring and, like, interacting with the world. And I know you don't particularly find that, Zach, because you feel like they're hiding things from you. But I feel like they're giving me things to find.
It is bad about signposting occasionally, because there are definitely some parts where, it like, go to the next dungeon. Okay, well, I guess I have a number on my map, so I should go there. And then you get there and, like, I don't know, I guess I need this book of translating ancient unreadable texts that I've never seen before.
They give you the fortune teller, at least, which is not like a great solution, but it is, if you get stuck, you can talk to her. And
that
she usually has relevant information for you. It introduced a lot of cool things for the Zelda franchise. The hookshot is just a really cool idea.
Oh, I love the magic upgrady bat, who's like, aha, now you have to carry more bombs, jerk.
It added the magic. It didn't add the magic meter. I guess Zelda 2 did, but it made it feel like it belonged there.
I liked this game a lot more until we played it for the podcast.
Oh, really?
It actually playing it again actually decreased my estimation of it.
Huh.
So.
And one more thing I want to say about it. The set pieces are really cool. Like when you first appear on that golden pyramid in the dark world. And
that's pretty good. When you first turn into a rabbit.
It has some really cool moments. When you take the Master Sword, like I said before. But you don't think as good as Super Metroid?
I cannot argue for it. But I okay. really like Super Metroid. So.
In that case, I will cede to you. And let's go down to Mega Man X. Another game I really, really like. But Mega Man X doesn't have the spectacle. And, like, spectacle is not the entirety of a game.
Certainly not.
It can
not.
Add.
If I had to pick one, I'd probably play Mega Man X.
The combat in Mega Man X is definitely better. It's faster paced. They both have kind of similar upgrade systems. In a lot of ways, X is more upgradey.
I feel like you could easily do a speedrun of Legend of Zelda, but I feel like the level of potential mastery for Mega Man X is higher, partially just due to the number of movement mechanics available to you. You can move faster, and therefore your choices are limited or are based around how you move.
Well, for me, it's not even that. It's just that I had more fun playing Mega Man X than I did playing Legend of Zelda.
And they're pretty similar levels of fun to me, honestly. They're very different kinds of fun. Like I said, Zelda is really about exploring and the cool moments. X is about the frantic pace, the jumping off walls, the dashing towards guys, the shooting guys. So, all right, below Mega Man X. Right below Mega Man X, we have Super Mario Bros. 3. And I like this game a lot more than I like Super Mario 3.
I'm the reverse, but then again, I'm also in the minority, and I know that.
Because Super Mario Bros. 3 also has a lot of cool set pieces. It introduces airships and the tanks at the end and the giant world.
It looks pretty damn good for a Nintendo game.
But I don't think they're as good. Zelda has a little more weight to it.
I don't think I ever got to the tanks at the end.
I think there's more meat in Link to the Past.
I agree, so we will put it. Link to the Past goes at number 6, above Super Mario Bros. 3 and below Mega Man X.
Although our top, like, 25 are starting to be pretty good. Even our almost our top 30, I think we pushed Strider down a few. So.
Yeah, our top 30 are actually pretty good. Doom 2 is still in there.
Eh. Doom 2 isn't bad, it's just
not Doom.
It's more Doom.
It's not as good as Doom.
Yeah.
Okay. Last game on the list. Not a game I think is great, but one we ended up liking quite a bit. Pretty fun. Little Western game with a little steampunk flair.
Oh,
Wild
yeah.
Guns.
I liked this game.
This game was actually a lot of fun.
A game that seems like it should be a light gun game, but isn't.
I think this game was really helped by the fact that we were playing a lot of this game as a group.
Well, the same with quite a few of our games are only as high as they are because co-op is cool, bro.
But this one was also legitimately fun to play alone,
I think. Well, there was also a level of mastery to this. I don't think any of us really applied much effort to mastering this game. But I feel like it's there. Like, you could get really good at this game, do no hit runs.
Any OP.
Yeah, any OP, definitely. That cyber lasso, man.
Okay. So Zach can't really talk about this, but since we just talked about co-op making it more fun, let's start with Gunstar Heroes. Do you think it's better than Gunstar Heroes?
I like it more than Gunstar Heroes. It's so... such an odd idea.
Agreed.
It reminds me a lot of Deadlands. That's not the same thing because it's cyberpunk versus
fantasy punk.
Fantasy punk, I guess. But the idea of, you know, this Western with an overlay. A little bit of Trigun, too.
Yeah, Trigun is that, basically.
All right, so I'm going to jump up to Excitebike because that's the next game that seems comparable to me. Is it better than the sort of Zen, not putter. Super interestingness of Excitebike.
Putter, 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 putter.
I enjoy the frenetic pace of this game.
I do
more.
Too. It's hard alone. It gets a lot better with friends.
Okay. Let's go up to Punch Out then.
I had more fun with Wild Guns.
I think I had more fun with Wild Guns, although I liked Punch Out because of its, it's a game about mastery.
Yeah.
You just repeat it over and over again until you win. And I liked that a lot, but I think I had more fun with Wild Guns. So
okay.
It is, gotta do, say one thing though. Wild Guns is much better when you have the controller.
Oh, as opposed to...
the Wii controller, yeah. As opposed to the Wii gamepad, as opposed to just the straight up Wii controller.
Yeah, I imagine so. Enough buttons to play helps, I'm sure. let's go up to Pokemon Snap then.
Pokemon Snap more.
Me too, honestly.
It, like, Pokemon Snap occupies this very weird niche in my mind.
It's almost number 30, so that's it's number 29 right now, so it's an interesting
guard. It is like a gatekeeper.
I think there are a few gatekeepers on this list for sure, but it's one of them.
ActRaiser, Gunstar.
I think.
Space Harrier's the gatekeeper of hell.
Super Mario Brothers.
How bad are you?
I don't know if anything's going to bottom out below Space Harrier.
Are you a bad enough dude to beat Space Harrier? If you're on this list, the answer is yes.
So between Punch-Out and Pokemon Snap, Blaster Master, that's a kind of interesting game in that range.
I think I preferred this game to Blaster Master.
Yeah, me too.
I thought Blaster Master had going on, but...
Yeah, I enjoy the exploration. It's certainly ambitious. It's got a lot going on, but in terms of sheer joy that a game brought me,
going with that old, with the aspect of it, I have actually looked at it on my Wii quite a few times and gone, I kind of want to play that game.
Okay.
And then usually something else comes up and I end up not doing it, but...
I end up playing Payday instead, but...
So Hydro Thunder, that's way below Pokemon Snap. Do we think it's better than Hydro Thunder?
Better is a...
I think the only reason why I would say that I had a little bit more fun was because when we actually got into it, we were playing a lot of it as a group before we recorded.
So is co-op better than anti-op?
I would have liked to play with friends on that, but I think the co-op might bump it for me.
I can't really definitively say. There's so much more going on in Hydro Thunder, but this game is also a lot more fun to me, so.
All right, let's put Wild Guns at the new number 30. It's the new Gatekeeper. Above Hydro Thunder and below Pokemon Snap.
Well, that just means that the ratio of good games we've played on our list is getting better. Yeah. All right, Jeremy, so what are we going to play next week then?
All right, well, I've been thinking about since we started doing the top 100 list. I want to fill in the games and franchises that we played out of order.
Oh, no.
So next week, we're going to start with a game that's in the franchise that started things that really didn't have what that franchise was known for yet. I haven't played it since I was like 6. It's a Game Boy launch title, Kirby's Dream Land.
Oh, man. Way back in the day.
Is that available on the 3DS?
Yes. 3DS Virtual Console. I think that's the only way to get it.
All right.
So next time on Last Time, almost high. This has been a production of Last Time on Video Games. Copyright 2015. All the games, movies, and other media I mentioned in the show are copyright their respective owners, in case that wasn't obvious. Past episodes, articles, and other information can be found at www.lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to contact us, send an email to ltovg@lasttimeonvideogames.com. If you'd like to find us on Twitter, we are @ltovg. We can also be found on iTunes. If you wanted to help us out, we would really appreciate if you left us a 5-star review. No extra lives were lost in the recording of this podcast. Them sexy mummies. They're taking over all our TV.